Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 176.
This week on the podcast, Tuesday's election results are garbage. Election day is for voting, you fools.
Ben Carson goes on the defensive about his bio, promising Americans from the bottom of his heart that he definitely did stab someone.
Nothing's funny about the Keystone Pipeline, so hooray, we'll never have to mention it to you again.
And Jeb can fix it. Not his image, but it is all taken care of. Whew.
MSNBC's Democratic Forum is forgotten about by 99.9% of the 2% of people who even knew about it in the first place.
And Fox News gets the facts right, but the tone confusingly wrong while reporting on this month's jobs numbers.
Plus, Christians rush to the rescue of a heartbroken baby Jesus who, in addition to taking on all of our sin, must now mourn the loss of his beloved Starbucks seasonal cups.
And Sinkhole Radio returns with warnings about the many dangers, both syrup and parking related, of going to an IHOP.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. Some new blogs up this week.
Some new blogs will be up next week. Stuff's happening over there, guys.
That's right.
Stuff is happening.
Yeah. If you read the Ben Carson bio,
don't bother because it's all wrong.
We'll get to that later. but anyway, you should read it anyway. But know that most of it has been
open to the facts changing.
Exactly.
Be open to the thought that maybe what you're reading is not, factually speaking, what happened to Ben Carson, despite the fact that it is what happened to Ben Carson according to Ben Carson. Right. In any case. Election day was last week. It was not even a midterm election year. It was an off year in all senses. But plenty of states have decided to have important elections on off years in order to stop people from voting in those elections.
It's a good plan.
And it's a plan that works.
It's not a good plan in the sense that it's bad for America.
It's a plan that's effective.
Right. It's a plan that is good if you're looking for people to not actually go and vote.
Right.
Which
As
is what happened.
Was the case with Kentucky.
Right.
Who decided to have a gubernatorial election in this random cycle.
Right. And I don't necessarily have the voter turnout numbers for the rest of these states, but we know that they were terrible in Kentucky. We posted about it earlier.
It was 30%.
It was 30%.
It was literally half of who voted last time.
Right. The record that they had set was in 2014 in that Senate race that they had.
Right. Because that was an exciting one. Mitch McConnell, Alvin Lundgren Grimes.
The record was 49% there, and that was the record for the lowest. And they shattered it this time.
By leaps and bounds.
They really came to play by not coming
to play. Yeah. In their 30% turnout, the 30% of people who showed up made the wrong choice.
They did.
They voted for Matt Bevin, who you might recall tried to primary Mitch McConnell in that Senate year.
Yeah.
Failed because he's a nutbag.
Yep.
And so he decided to run for governor. And it was a great idea because he was going to run in 2015 when no one knew about it.
He was losing anywhere between 5 and 8% in all of the polls going into the election. Now we know that polls... I've been getting it wrong a lot of times.
Right.
But, I mean, he was down by enough that everybody seemed to think that he would
lose. Well, it's always hard to predict such a low voter turnout,
too. It is.
You can't know what's going to happen when nobody shows up.
No, because they were off big time. Because he won by 9%.
Yeah.
I think he won, 54 to 45.
So there's two options. One of which is that the polls were wrong. And the other of which is that he stole the election. But either way, at 30% turnout... It almost doesn't matter. You have to steal an election at that point if no one even cares.
Yeah. But the reason why this is such a big deal is because, this is a pickup in, governors for
the GOP.
It had a Democratic governor who had, Kentucky was one of the big success stories of the Obamacare exchanges and also that they took the Medicaid expansion money.
And it was a surprise. We didn't know that they were going to do that. They were one of the states that seemed like a state that wouldn't have traditionally gone the healthcare route.
Right.
And
but
did
Steve
it,
Beshear,
and it was a huge success.
The governor there really embraced it, and they won.
Yeah.
People have healthcare there. But apparently they don't
want it. 400,000 of them are not going to have it anymore because this whole race was basically about Obamacare.
Right.
Matt Bevin was running on a repeal, the Obamacare and the exchange
He wants to
platform.
Shut down
He
the
wants
state's
to shut down
exchange.
Kentucky's exchange.
He's questioned whether
they should
take
the Medicare expansion money, which, by the way, once you've done that, the damage is done to your Republican psyche. Just leave it alone. It's free money.
Yeah.
Like, what are you, fools?
I know.
Like, that's such a foolish move.
Well, and this is one
just
of those
don't
things
talk
where,
about it.
This is one of those things where, I was, I'm still upset by this because it's I want people to do better. And I also want people to vote because we live in a democracy and you should do
that.
But also, what?
You fucking deserved it, Kentucky.
Keep
30% voter turnout?
Right. Live with it.
Live with it.
Every time something like this happens, the same thing happened in Kansas. It's, mm-hmm. you know, when the they reelected Sam Brownback. It's like, then keep living in Kansas yeah. and being terrible. Like, right. that's your plan. Your choice. Then every time something like this happens, it makes me all the happier that I live in California. Because it's just sort of like, you know, screw you guys. Let 400,000 people go off their
health care. Of your own people.
That's sad.
I feel bad about it. But right? I live in California where we're not going to do that.
Right.
And if you don't care about 400,000 people in your own state, that's a state issue for you guys to work out.
That is. Yeah. I mean, you didn't. You did it wrong.
Well, and also, this is foolish because 400,000 people losing health insurance is 400,000 stories of the tragedy of losing health insurance
that suddenly
exists to show why Obamacare is so important in the first place.
Yeah.
This just is going to create like a plethora of great examples of why we need it. They're just doing us a favor. And they're doing it by sacrificing their own. It's like a terrible plan on their part.
I was going to say, was that the idea all along?
Right?
No, I don't think it
was. No, I don't think it was. I think Matt Bevin is evil. Yeah. But in any case, Mississippi also had an incumbent GOP governor who won again.
Right, and that's no surprise. The only thing that was interesting there was that the Democrat is a truck driver.
Can, like, anyone just... Like, they were just like, you know what? Go ahead. Run. You're not going to win. Right. Do whatever you want. Let's all run.
I know.
In Virginia, where Terry McAuliffe had been trying really hard to take control of the state legislature, he failed to do so.
Right. He had been, you know, like you said, going really hard because he's, you know, it's close there.
It's 21 to 19.
And so he was trying to get that flipped because he obviously, you know, wants to get in some of his, you know, legislative agenda, which is not happening right now. Again, Obamacare.
Well,
that's a state kind of like New York City
that has two very distinct regions that are drastically different.
Right. Exactly.
You know, yeah. Virginia is a crackpot place.
Yeah.
But then there's also the DC suburbs, which make up almost half of their voters.
Right. And that's it's a small section of the state, but it's huge in terms of population.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's got a dichotomy.
It's got a bit of a dichotomy. Yes. in Ohio, they decided this was a weird thing.
Ohio,
first of all, was voting on whether or not to legalize recreational marijuana. Not a state that I would have thought would be on the forefront of that.
No.
But okay. Ohio, do you?
Right. You know, Colorado has that sort of,
they
know,
were
streak.
Already stoners there.
Right, they were stoners, and they also sort of have, like, that streak of libertarianism.
They're like frontiersmen.
Sort of.
They're voting for all sorts of random shit.
So that made sense.
Yeah.
But
Ohio is a curious one. That's sort of like, as much as Brent wouldn't consider that the traditional Midwest, I, as a person whose family is from Ohio, would consider that the traditional Midwest. It's a relatively traditional electorate. So, in any case... Yeah. There was a lot of drama around this bill because it was a weird bill that basically would have resulted in it. It only would have legalized a few growers and sellers of marijuana. So it was going to create like a weird monopoly.
Yeah, exactly.
Which maybe would have even driven the price up, which is not what people who want to smoke pot all the time are looking for.
No, there people on both sides of this. There were people who are on the side of legalizing marijuana who were still not quite so sure. I mean, they were sort of pushing for it because I think they felt like this would still be
a boon for them.
But it was not really ever sort of embraced in the way that really got the full-throated support of, you know, people who
You know
are
who
pushing
did
to.
Embrace it with full-throated support?
I do.
Nick Lachey, former lead singer of 98 Degrees, a band that I hope you've forgotten. I once saw 98 Degrees live.
Oh, my.
It was...
Not great.
It was about as underwhelming as you can expect it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're no NSYNC, guys.
They're no NSYNC. They don't dance well.
They don't dance. They were kind. It was like four guys from the Midwest who were kind of stocky, like stumbling around the stage.
Yeah.
In any case.
But he was one of the main guys behind Responsible Ohio, which was he was one of the investors. And so that was odd.
That was a weird thing that happened in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Houston fucked some shit up.
This is probably the next worst thing, I think, probably behind Kentucky, or maybe on par with Kentucky, because they were voting on,
I
hate when this happens too, because they had already had this in place for a year. They had like passed it.
Right.
I think the city council or something had passed it. Basically,
it was an equal protection law for people that had, you know, on the basis, it prevented discrimination on the basis of race, sexual orientation, gender identity, and some other categories. But
in employment, housing, and public spaces. And the two key things here are public spaces and gender identity, because that's really what this came down to.
This law that, again, already existed.
Yeah, because the opponents really came out on top, and it wasn't even close. It was 61-39, which is a blowout because it's not like Houston is going, I mean, it is in Texas, but it's not like they're going around like gay hating. Their mayor is a lesbian, right, for God's sake. It's, so 61-39 is crazy enough for something that's already in place anyway.
The thing that defeated this law was the sort of Mike Huckabee narrative of, what if we're letting men into bathrooms to sexually assault women?
Yeah, it's the bathrooms. That's exactly what happened. It was the sort of the specter of male sexual predators invading women's bathrooms. Now, 17 states
has
not existent. 17 states already have this bill in place, and countless cities all across the country. And there has been zero issue with creepers going into women's bathrooms. Like, that's not what's happening.
There are problems with sexual predators in public spaces all over America. It's not transsexuals that are causing those problems.
No, it's not.
It's regular men.
Yeah. But this really, I think, sent like a big wake-up call to the LGBT community because obviously
I didn't mean to say regular, by the way. That was my slip up. We're talking about equal protection here. God.
But, you know, we've just had some big wins recently.
Yeah.
You know, and
well, this is what happens. This is part of the process. It's like how we learned this week that the Mormon Church has decided to stop investing heavily in anti-LGBT legislation. They were the people behind Prop 8.
Yeah.
So this is sort of part of the process where these things sort of come and go until finally we realize that we're moving in one direction on this issue. Like, they can try to keep setting the clock back on it, but this is not the direction we're moving.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is lame.
Yeah.
Don't be lame.
I know.
It's lame to be
lame. Do better, Houston.
Do better.
Boy.
Seattle.
And some good news. Washington had a couple.
Killed it.
Right. Seattle specifically killed it.
Yeah. This is specifically something I'm very excited about. Washington also had another thing that we're excited
about.
Less
exciting. But at least the people of Washington were doing the right things.
It's exciting for the
people that it's exciting for. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. But Seattle voted on an honest elections referendum.
Yeah. They're trying to get money out of politics.
They're trying to get money out of politics. It basically gives voters $100 each in, quote, democracy vouchers.
Like that.
They get four. So they're $25 vouchers. They get four of them. And they can basically give them to the candidate of their choice.
Right.
And then it lowered donation caps and banned contributions from corporations that have, like, significant city business interests.
Right.
And, you know, increased transparency in terms of how election financing is carried out and stuff like that. But, this is, and also
increased fines for wrongdoing,
and increased
for
electoral fines. And it requires people who are in government to wait 3 years before they can register as a lobbyist.
I love that.
That's what we need.
Yeah, because everybody's getting out of government, and then they immediately go and become some rich
lobbyist.
Right,
that's how you make your money after you make a government salary for a few years.
Yeah.
That's how you go, and then you work for a corporation, you know, shilling for Exxon or something.
So that's awesome. Find a happy story from
Seattle. A happy story from Seattle.
Yeah.
Only Seattle could pull off 2015 elections, apparently. They're the only people that can be trusted to vote.
Exactly. And there was also in Washington, there was a statewide referendum that they passed a law that would criminalize selling and purchasing, trading, or distributing certain animal species threatened with extinction. Boy, extinction is a word.
And it's a stricter law than what we have in a lot of progressive states like New York and California.
Right,
so
exactly.
That's an impressive law. Meanwhile,
Texas did the exact opposite.
The exact opposite. Texas was like, you know what? Let's make sure anyone can kill anything they want in this state.
Right.
Doesn't matter what the environment says.
Yeah, they passed Proposition 6, and it makes it more difficult for activist groups to push through new legislation or regulations aimed at expanding protections for animals or delicate ecosystems.
Yeah.
So basically, you can just go around shooting anything you want. You can catch as many fish as you can take home, and there's no rules about shooting or killing anything in Texas any longer.
And they're the 19th state to have this kind of a law.
That's too many.
That's too many states, guys. We don't need to shoot everything. Listen, if you need to shoot deer, that's your business. There's too many of those. We get it. We're part of the ecosystem for deer.
Yeah.
We don't need to kill all the fish, though, or the exotic species. Like, what do we need to do that for? Who's helped by that?
Why is that fun?
That's not... First of all, I have questions about whether hunting is fun to begin with.
I do, too.
And I'm a person who saw a stabbing crime scene today.
That's
so
right.
So I've recently been near a site of death and destruction.
Yeah.
And I didn't find it fun.
No.
I was walking down the street in Hollywood and came across a stabbing crime scene, as you do sometimes in Hollywood. And it was gross.
I'm shocked.
God.
Yeah.
And then in San Francisco...
This is an interesting one.
This is an interesting one. I have sort of... I see both sides of this issue. I ultimately think I come down on the side of affordable housing, obviously, over corporate interests or even private profit interests.
Yeah, well, this what happened was they were voting on a law that would have made it much harder for Airbnb to operate in the city.
What's happening in San Francisco, it's happening in cities all over the country, especially cities with sort of condensed yes. zones and limited space. Because, you know, San Francisco is built on a peninsula. It can't expand.
Yeah, it's like San Francisco's Manhattan. Tiny.
San Francisco's tiny.
Yeah.
And so this is something that a lot of cities in that situation are facing, where people are investing in property there just to rent it out as Airbnb spaces, which is terrible for the quality of life of the people who already live there, because there's like constant turnover and you don't have reliable tenants in any of right. these units, and people who care about the neighborhood or the units.
Right.
And it also drives up real estate prices, because you can make a lot more money Airbnb-ing your apartment than right. someone can afford
and
to pay a month.
And real estate in the last couple of years has gone skyrocketed in San Francisco. It's impossible to be able yeah. to live there. And so
I would like to see every major city pass investment property taxes that make this kind of thing prohibitively expensive. And I understand, I even have family that operate an Airbnb in right. Brooklyn.
Well, and I understand. I've gone on vacation and used Airbnb.
As someone who is literally seeing on every front private interests and profit ruining my quality of life at home. Yeah. You know, we're seeing this in New York at my parents' apartment. We're seeing right. this in LA currently. I'm having an issue with my own apartment. We're seeing this with the pipeline in upstate New York. I feel like there has to be a line where other people's profit motives can't significantly impact your quality of life in your own home.
Correct.
And that is not something that we regulate very well in this country.
Yeah.
It's something that I've been on a rampage about all week.
Yeah.
And that is something that I see Airbnb contributing to. I feel like I wouldn't want Airbnb to be operating in my own building.
No.
It would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, if it was my own house and I had an apartment in my own house, that's very different than doing it in a place like in San Francisco where everyone lives in apartments and it's not your own home. It's
right.
a shared space that you're then leaving to the public, basically.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
You know. So, but in any case,
it's going to keep going.
It's going to keep going. So, never mind.
Airbnb won.
Continue going to San Francisco and staying in Airbnbs.
I do think this is something that is going to...
This is going to have to be addressed at some point.
I was going to say, this is the first in what is going to be a long sort of back and forth on this issue.
It's going to have to be, because cities have become so expensive to live in, and the thing that makes them vibrant and interesting is people living in them,
right. Well, and
not
it's an interesting
investment properties and tourists.
And it's an interesting place for this to have happened, too, just because of, you know,
San Francisco has been facing this problem for a long time.
And
San Francisco, limited in space.
And San Francisco is such a... It's a hotbed for this. It's a progressive city and for this sharing economy,
yes.
too.
So there's, oh, right, because they're the tech incubator.
There's this weird sort of, you know, thing where obviously
it's a... You like how I cut you off three times didn't get to what you were going to say?
But everything that you said was also accurate. But, you know, it's a weird place for this to be happening because it's progressive, but also, you know, it's kind of
right,
like the central place for this is
this,
for
is
this
where
to be happening.
You Uber to work at your
right.
tech startup and then,
exactly, and then
take a Lyft home and then stay in your Airbnb.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, San Francisco.
Yeah.
Also, this explains a lot about why I've never wanted to live in San Francisco. It's such a beautiful city. And for some, like, I always go there and for one day, I'm like, this is such a nice city. I should move here. And then 2 days in, I'm like, I don't think I want to live here. It's like, I've seen the whole thing at that point. And then I'm like, turns out it's just a bunch of people who work in tech.
Right.
After all of that.
Yeah.
In any case. Oh, some good news, though, for just America in general that was not voted on in the election, but is just smart choices being made by people.
Yeah.
We finally just have definitively rejected the Keystone Pipeline. It's not going to happen.
Done.
We can move on with our lives.
That's right. We sort of saw it coming earlier in the week because the company who was trying to build it had asked for an extension in a decision being made because there's that whole thing that we talked about on the podcast.
Nebraska.
Where, like, Nebraska, whether it could actually go through there because of some laws
or whatever, a law that had to do with eminent domain, I think.
And so they had said, let's wait until we settle out this whole Nebraska thing. And a lot of people
were like, okay, you see what's happening.
Right, exactly. A lot of people thought that they had an inclination that we were going to be finding out soon. And then lo and behold,
the things that were supposed to be benefits of it are either not necessary or lies.
Well, that's what's so funny because, you know, the Republicans have said, first off, that it's going to be a way to help jobs. Now, a lot of people have said that it wouldn't create that many jobs
anyway.
And it wouldn't have created permanent jobs. Right, permanent jobs. And we're going to get to the jobs numbers anyway.
But they're
good.
As
Obama rightly noted out, we don't need these jobs that are ultimately going to go away and not be that many anyway.
Yeah.
And also, it was supposedly going to lower gas prices, and due to the fact that we're drilling everywhere.
Right. Gas prices are quite low.
Gas prices are really low right now.
Really lower
we don't
gas
need dirty
prices
tar sands
no.
being, you know, tracked all the way across the country. To lower gas prices because we're there already.
Right,
we did it.
Yeah. Success. It was also, we were going to stop buying so much foreign oil, but since we're drilling all over the place, we're not doing that anyway. So,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, I think Obama in that speech said something to the effect, and I can't remember what the exact stat was, but like, it's for the first time we're either creating our own oil more than we're importing, or at least it's close. It's like the closest that ratio of how much we're making or how much we're importing to export. Right, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, you know, we did it, guys.
Yeah. And
we did it without
the Keystone.
Stupid pipeline. Yeah. We had to wait 7 years.
And Obama said, like, this is, doing this would have undermined our credibility as we tried to create a greener world.
Right.
If we're going to lead the world, which we don't, in green initiatives, which Obama would like to do,
right,
then we can't be the people that are also putting a Keystone XL pipeline all the way across the country.
Yeah.
We can't have it both ways.
And I love that he said this too, because this is the thing that Republicans like to say about global warming all the time, is that we can't do anything about global warming unless we have the entire world doing it, unless we have China in on it with us or whatever. But the Republicans also say that they want America to be leading. They always talk about Obama leading from behind.
Yeah.
But it's only in, you know, when they're talking about wanting to blow something up, right? So, like, I like that he used that sort of terminology here, because, like, that's, you know, we should be leading on this. And building this pipeline would have, like he said, it would have only set us back on this. Like, how could you, you know, this is the part of the reason he made this announcement is because there's that big meeting on climate change with all of the world leaders coming up in a couple weeks. How do you go to that meeting and say, yes, we're going to build this giant pipeline that's carrying dirty oil all the way across?
But you guys stop doing what you're doing.
But you stop, you do better.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't do that.
You can't have both.
Like,
you can't have both.
Of course you had to say no. Like, you just had to.
Yeah. Well, and it was too ridiculous.
Yeah. Yes.
At the end of the day, it was too ridiculous of an ask.
Yes.
It's like we were shocked as a nation into thinking we should say yes because we were like, oh, God, a pipeline all the way across the I don't know, I guess. Like, I always say, like, when I was in college, someone asked me for a ride to the doctor at 6 a.m. and I said yes because I was so appalled that they would ask that I didn't know how to appropriately express the no that I want, like, my no-ness.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what I feel like the Keystone Pipeline was. It was, like, such a ridiculously transparent request for private profit that would have destroyed the environment of all, you know, would have destroyed our credibility on the environment all for a private company to profit that wasn't even going to be really Americans profiting from it.
No.
Like, that was just such a, like, crazily absurd request that I feel like we were like, oh, okay, I guess.
I know.
I don't know. Like, maybe.
We didn't know our no-ness.
Our no-ness, yeah.
Those were wise words
that you just
said. I don't even know if you said
them.
Know that you said him.
I said no-ness. I know no-ness was the word that I said,
yeah, you
so
did.
I invented that.
It was good. I like that.
No-ness trademarked Lila Norton.
Yes.
2015.
Oh my gosh. This is so good. So we reference this, obviously, in our Ben Carson bio that is now totally still worth reading because it's funny, but
well,
it's
and
not
I updated
worth reading
it to reflect some of this.
Oh, good. Okay,
but not
good.
All of it, because we couldn't have known that this would just keep blowing up over and over and over in Ben Carson's face. Turns out, Gifted Hands, the text that has been given to millions of school children to inspire them to better themselves...
Fiction.
...is fiction. It's a work of fiction.
Yes. So, this all started when Politico... You know, well, now that he's in first place, we're, of course, like, looking at his bio.
We're going to have to look at who he is.
You know, he wrote this book in 1990, and no one cared to investigate it at the time.
Because
it was a great story, and it was lovely.
Now
he's trying to lead the free world, and he's got a good shot at doing so, which is upsetting in itself.
Right.
But, you know, so now we're like, well, let's maybe look into some of this stuff. And so Politico did, and then now it has set off a whole firestorm of, like, looking into everything in this book.
Well, there's
but the main thing is...
The first revelation.
Right.
Because there's a few revelations that have since rolled out.
Right.
The first and primary revelation was he was never offered a scholarship to West Point. For two reasons. One of which is there's no such thing as getting a scholarship
to
West Point.
You can't have one of
those. A thing that when I heard that story, I was like, because I went to school very close to West Point, I was sort of like, wait a minute. I don't think that's a thing. I thought everyone went for free to West Point. But I was like, maybe, I don't know. Whatever. I don't know everything.
Yeah. But a nomination to West Point begins with, or an application to West Point begins with a nomination by a member of Congress or another prominent government or military official. After that, a rigorous vetting process begins. And if offered admission, all costs are covered for all students. So there are no full scholarships. So that's not a thing. So that's why people...
It's a free school.
Right. So that's why people started thinking that maybe this was crazy. So they were like, well, let's figure out what the story is. So in the way Carson tells it, in 1969, when he was 17, he went to... he was introduced to General Westmoreland, who had just ended his command of U.S. forces in Vietnam, and the two dined together.
Yeah.
And that meeting, according to Carson's telling, was followed by the offer of a full scholarship to the military academy. Right. So he now says that he doesn't remember all the specific details, but I had done so extraordinarily well. I was told that someone like me, they could get me a scholarship to West Point, but I had made it clear I was going to pursue a career in medicine, which is not what he said initially.
No. Initially, he was offered a full... The lore is, as has been repeated by every news source...
Up until recently, he was asked in his Facebook question and answer in August about this, and he said yes, that this had happened.
This had happened.
So he's not...
Now, it's a casual conversation... That correct. Only, it took a brief amount of digging from Politico to uncover. Right.
Because what they were able to find was that he didn't even, he never applied.
He never applied.
He never applied.
That, by the way, is easy to find out.
Right,
that's
exactly.
a matter of record.
And so Politico went to his campaign, and they had to, of course, say that it was, that he did never apply, and he never had been.
And there was no formal offer of a scholarship, A, because no such thing exists,
right.
and B, because there was no application to offer the scholarship to. Yeah. So now he's blaming the media.
Of course. Obviously.
It's obviously the media's fault that he lied. It's so easy to
He recently said, they're going to ask my kindergarten teacher if he ever wet his pants, which I'd like to know.
Yeah.
So let's figure it out.
If we're going on a fact-finding mission, that is among the... If he's claiming that he never did.
Right?
Because we've all been to kindergarten. We know how that goes.
Yeah.
So, listen...
But, I don't know if I want somebody taking us into war if he was a pants wetter.
No, exactly.
We should know.
No, anyway. So in any case, questions have started to pile up. Because it turns out Gifted Hands is just filled to the brim with exaggerations and lies.
Yeah, so now it's time to start dealing with all the other key points in his biography through life.
For example...
This is a good one.
I love this. He was in high school
yes.
on the day that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated and claims that he heroically protected some white students from anger-fueled attacks by hiding them in a biology lab where he was working as a student.
Right.
So the Wall Street Journal could not confirm this account. They went and interviewed a whole bunch of his former classmates and none of them could figure out why white students needed to be protected on that day.
They could, and they also didn't remember the riot. They remembered the riot.
Right,
they
remembered the riot, but they couldn't recall white students hiding anywhere during the riot, or that especially any of them hiding in the bio lab.
Right, because
that was a fake story that he made up.
Correct.
Then this is hilarious because it's so detailed.
Like, it's so detailed.
He says in his autobiography that when he was at Yale. He took a psychology class called Perceptions 301. Mm. He remembers the name of the class and
the
number
of the class. Yes.
And there was like this whole story about how their final exam paper, the professor came in and said their final exam papers had been burned and then they all had to retake the final exam and then the test that they took was much harder and then everyone walked out of it except him and then he was handed $10 or something and told that he was the most honest student in the class.
Yeah. But the key point here is he says that the Yale Daily News and the professor, Carson claimed, told him
Yale Daily News came and took his picture.
That's what he said. That was one of his claims in the story.
And then,
so they went back.
The Wall Street Journal went and examined the Yale Daily News archives and went and spoke to the librarian at the Yale Daily News. Or the librarian at the Yale Library. Yeah. Two things. What? There's no picture of him in the Yale Daily News.
No.
And also, no one can recall a class called Perceptions 301. Neither the class name or number exist.
Yeah.
So... campaign declined to comment.
Yeah.
Then there's this hilarious story about how we found God.
Yes.
Where he supposedly stabbed one of his friends when he was a kid and then found God somehow in the aftermath.
Yeah, this is the story that he tells the story still on the campaign trail. It's one of his favorite stories to tell because he likes to talk about how he found God. And the story itself is crazy anyway because he says that he got so mad when he was a child, he stabbed somebody, but the knife blade broke because it hit the person's belt buckle that they had. So, people have been looking into that, and no one can find
the person who was stabbed. And
no one can remember. CNN went and asked a bunch of his childhood friends, and no one can remember him as like this mean, rage-filled kid that he.
Part of the lore that he has created is that he was an angry kid and he was violent, and then he found.
And then this stabbing happened, and then he realized that he was wrong, went into the bathroom, and started sobbing, prayed to God for forgiveness, and then has been a changed man ever since. And that's why he's so calm.
Right.
That's why he tells the story a lot because he gets calm. He has this calm.
That story was a lie because no one just goes into a bathroom after one traumatic event and becomes a calm person. Like, that's not how psychology works.
Yeah.
But in any case,
so
he goes on the Kelly File on Fox News and is asked about this and claims that the person that he tried to stab was a close relative and didn't want to come forward.
That's convenient.
That is convenient.
That's very convenient.
But I love that he's desperate now to prove that he did stab somebody.
Like, that's what it's come to.
him wandering around insisting against all facts.
That
he tried to kill somebody. I promise you, I did stab somebody. I am a guy who was angry and violent and stabbed somebody.
Yeah.
Don't let those liars in the liberal media tell you that I was a man who didn't stab somebody. I stabbed somebody.
That's right.
And then, so now he's walking around saying that everyone's desperate to tarnish his reputation. Yes. Mm-hmm. But he's also fundraising a boatload off of all of this.
Yeah, he made $3.5 million last week. That's more than a lot of some of his people that he's running against have raised the
this
entire
whole time.
Campaign season. Yeah.
So
this
controversy is just showering money on him.
Well, and what's so interesting, because we're going to talk about a story next that is completely insane, and we've talked about a lot of the insane things that he has said. We put a lot of them in this bio of him, and I think that you rightly noted in the bio that, you know, what Ben Carson proves is that, you know, savants are real.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
Because
he's
a man who
can operate on a child's brain.
He's obviously very gifted. I mean, if you look at his career in medicine, I mean, it's really sort of unmatched with other, you know, neurosurgeons.
Right.
But he is
from what we know.
From what
we don't
know.
Actually know anything about neurosurgeons.
Let's say it. But no other neurosurgeons have been played by Cuba Gooding Jr. on television.
So true.
That much I know.
No.
Okay.
There's only the fictional Derek Shepherd to compete with the memory of the Ben Carson that was.
But, you know, he is ridiculous and borderline an insane, not borderline,
no,
an insane
fully,
person
an insane
when
person.
It comes to literally all other things.
All other things.
Except
brain surgery.
And
that includes agreed upon historical facts.
Yes.
Such as what the pyramids were used for.
Well, right.
You know the pyramids. The pyramids,
right.
Those big things in Egypt that were tombs for pharaohs in Egypt.
Correct.
That we know because the Egyptians left us things that said that these are tombs for our pharaohs, and then we went in and found the pharaoh tombs inside of the pyramid.
And that's the thing. Like, you know, I said to you, I was like, even if, like, it's more reasonable to me for someone to argue against evolution than this. Because like, evolution...
We can never fully prove evolution. It is a theory forever because we can't know a thing that we missed.
We can have agree that it probably is what happened.
Right.
Excuse me. But here we have actual proof because the Egyptians wrote it down.
Right. They told us.
They told us. And we have
been in there. And then we went in and verified.
We have been in there.
Trust but verify.
Right. We did not.
We did it.
We didn't see giant grain stores, which is
what he
is claiming.
Well, first, my favorite thing about this. So this begins with a quote from a commencement speech that he gave at Andrews University in 1998 that BuzzFeed unearthed, where he says, "My own personal theory is that Joseph built the pyramids to store grain."
Joseph of the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat fame and fortune, by the way, is who we're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. "Now, all the archaeologists think that they were made for the pharaoh's graves, but you know, it would have been something awfully big. When you stop and think about it, I don't think it'd just disappear over the course of time to store that much grain."
Mm-hmm. So,
first of all, don't have your own personal theory about what the pyramids were used for.
You can't.
That's like having your own personal
theory
about what the moon is for. Like, that's not a thing to have a personal theory about.
No.
Have a personal theory about how JFK was shot. We don't know what happened.
Right. Yes.
Have a personal theory about what, you know, what was actually going on in the World Trade Center on 9/11.
Sure.
Whether or not there were things, you know,
yes.
Have a conspiracy theory to your heart's content.
Yes.
Don't have a personal theory about what the pyramids were for.
Right.
Why bother?
Yeah.
What do you gain from insisting that the pyramids were used to store grain by Joseph? That's insane.
Yeah.
God. In any case, he was asked about it this week and continued to verify that he believes that the pyramids were used to store grain.
That's right.
So, and it's based on a passage in Genesis, which is, again, in a book that I would call fictional.
Well, it is.
Right.
This is the same Bible chapter that, you know, recalls the tale of Earth being made in 7 days.
A classic.
Just keep this in mind.
Right.
As you
yes, in which he
think
says,
about the story.
"Joseph stored up grain in great abundance like the sand of the sea until he stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure." It doesn't say anything about the pyramids. Yeah.
Now, there's also sort of this, back in the Renaissance times,
where they knew all the facts.
Yes,
about
exactly.
Science.
There was a story about the pyramids as a storage place because there was like this monk.
Oh yes, a monk was saying
Bernard the Wise, who was a pilgrim to Egypt in 870 AD, said that the pyramids were the remains of 7 granaries, which he didn't. Now, here's what happened. So this was in 870. We weren't able to decipher the hieroglyphs and go into...
Right. We didn't have the technology to do, or the knowledge to do either of those things until later.
Until the 19th century.
Right.
So the reason why he thought this was because it was just conjecture and he couldn't read.
Exactly.
Okay?
And
now,
that's... You know what? It's as good a guess as any.
Right?
Who the fuck knew what those pyramids were for? They were
Why not be granaries?
They're huge. They're insane looking.
But now that we know,
now that we know. We know facts based on what we know. P.S. I think worth remembering here. Ben Carson is a scientist.
Yes.
He's a professional scientist.
Right?
Like
he's familiar with the scientific theory.
How he has been able to, like somehow separate himself from science, you know, from sort of like normal science logic in every area except neurosurgery.
Yes, it doesn't make any sense.
Like, it's crazy. Like, the scientific method is lost to him in all regards except for as it pertains to the human brain. It's so weird.
It's bizarre.
Because he has to accept elements of the scientific method in order for his work to have existed in the first place.
Yeah.
The scientific method is how all science has figured out how to be science. Like, it's crazy to me that he is rejecting the scientific method in so many crazy ways when it comes to the environment, when it comes to what the pyramids were used for. I mean, just a variety of different things.
Yeah.
But, like, his entire life's work was reliant on the scientific method.
Yeah.
It's just insane. Idiot savants are real.
They are.
Meanwhile, Trump is an idiot savant of a different regard. He is a TV ratings idiot savant.
Correct.
That man can get ratings for any old thing.
Yep.
Just adding to the sideshow quality of his campaign is the fact that he hosted SNL last
week. That's right.
Don't be a presidential candidate hosting SNL.
Yeah. But
make
it was
an appearance and wave to everyone and then leave.
But it beat
it was the second time, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He did it in 2004. It was huge ratings.
Yeah, it beat the previous season's high by 47%. It got a 6.6 household rating, which is huge. And I think it was, like, the highest in years, too, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, well,
like
so
that?
They don't actually have the full ratings, but the household rating was higher than their season premiere and higher than most of every other episode they've ever shown.
Yeah.
They're anticipating that this episode could have had as many as 10 million viewers.
Wow, that's crazy.
Which is, like, for SNL, P.S., that is on in the middle of the night. I don't
That's
know
right.
if you're familiar
yes.
with things, guys, yeah. but I mean,
I didn't watch it.
I didn't watch
I
it
I intend
either.
To, actually. I usually watch Saturday Night Live.
I enjoy Saturday Night Live. I don't.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it. I enjoy elements of it that are on the internet the next day.
Sure.
I just can't sit and watch the whole show. Yeah. I want to be a person who can.
Fair enough.
P.S.,
yeah.
we enjoyed some great sketch comedy last night in the
dance.
Form of Hubbard Street collaborating with Second City. Hubbard Street is like the best contemporary company in America.
New favorite company. We declared it last night.
They did a collaboration with Second City, as in the like improv theater in Chicago.
Right.
And it was just like mind-blowingly good.
It was so good.
It was great in every way that a show could be great.
Yeah.
We recommend, I don't know how you can see it, but go ahead and try.
Be doing more dancing on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, obviously. It was just like too great for us to describe further.
Yeah.
But in any case,
yeah.
if that show comes to your town, mess up. Go see it.
Yeah.
In any case, Donald Trump also has recently relayed a story, or there's this new bio of Poppy Bush.
Yes.
That indicates that in 1998, his team approached Donald Trump about potentially being a running mate. And
I mean,
then Donald Trump was asked about it on State of the Union on CNN and said that Lee Atwater, who was one of Bush's advisors, came and approached him. And he said, he says that he said in response, "I don't know, Lee, check it out, take a look. And if it works, I guess I would certainly consider it. But I never really went much further than that."
God, that would have been a real
kick in the pants.
Kick in the pants. Yes.
Kick
I
in
like
the head.
That. People aren't saying kick in the pants.
I've been saying it a lot
days,
this week.
The
I don't
way.
Know what's
you
going
have.
On with me.
Yeah, you have.
Well, I've just been angry. I've been thinking about kicking things.
Anyway. Oh, God. This is awesome.
Yes.
Because Jeb Bush this week...
Jeb exclamation point Bush.
Bush, out on the campaign trail, revealed his new campaign slogan.
Right. He ditched the exclamation point.
Yes.
I guess he wasn't feeling as enthusiastic as he initially thought he would. And his new slogan is, "Jeb can fix it."
Yes. Now, this, of course, obviously, immediately everyone was like, "Oh,
okay.
Well, we know one thing he can fix. It was the 2000 election for
exactly.
his brother." Which
I
was,
mean, this was... like it's like a... Like,
he left
that door wide open.
He sure
How could
did.
They have not even...
Yeah.
I mean, it's too much.
Uh-huh.
In any case, the other thing that they didn't do, though, after not thinking about the most obvious joke in the world that could be made of, based on Jeb Can Fix It, is buy the domain name jebcanfixit.com.
Yes.
Come on!
Yeah.
How many times is this going to happen to people? It's
right.
like...
So
you
the,
just go and buy the
So the person
name.
Who did buy it did it in retaliation because he was pissed that Jeb Bush stole this campaign slogan from him because Jimmy Flanagan, who's a self-described community organizer, activist, and web developer in
Northwest
Austin.
Northwest Austin.
Yeah. He his campaign slogan was "Flanagan can fix it."
Yeah. He's been
Which
running
is better
for the
because
Austin...
it's got alliteration.
Exactly.
I mean,
like, that's how you... Yeah. That's how
better.
You use the fix-it slogan.
Yeah.
He's running for Austin City Council and had a website with Flanagan Can Fix It up. And then when he heard that Bush had stolen his beloved campaign slogan, he immediately went and bought JebCanFixIt.com.
Right, and which then, was available.
Right, because no one thought to buy that.
Yeah.
And then, so he put a Jeb 2016 logo up, but instead of an exclamation point, he put a question mark after the name. And then below said, is Jeb running for president or city council? And then below that put one of his campaign videos, which is just, apparently it's 6 minutes, it's a single shot, and it's him rescuing cats from trees, pouring old women wine, and changing a baby's diaper while telling the viewers why he deserves to be elected.
So good.
Like, oh boy.
Jeb, you fuck up.
He's sad.
That's it.
It's a sad, he's like a classic middle child syndrome.
Yeah.
It's like, and we don't know anything about that because we're both only children, but we assume that it's terrible to be a middle child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would have to assume because Jeb is showing us that.
Yes.
In any case, it's also terrible to be at the bottom of the pack of the 2016 GOP hopefuls.
Yeah, a couple people who have been on the main stage for all of the previous debates are getting relegated to the kiddie table.
Yep.
Yes. Chris Christie and Mike Huckabee have been bumped.
Yes.
Oh, my God. So there's only going to be eight people on
the stage.
Next
week is the 4,000th GOP debate.
Fourth.
4,000th.
Yes.
GOP debate.
Yeah.
It's going to be Fox Business is sponsoring it.
Yeah.
And they have decided that they are only going to have eight people on the stage because they put new requirements in that. So there's all these people at the bottom of the pool that are like just clumped in the 1-2% range.
Yeah. So supposedly, like the new rules are that you had to score 2.5% or higher in an average of the four most recent national polls.
Right.
And neither of them supposedly have done
Are doing that. Every, I mean, there's like 1,000 other people that are doing just that. Like the Fiorina, Kasich, Paul contingent is still down there at the bottom. So the primetime lineup is now going to be Trump, Carson, Bush, Rubio, Cruz, Fiorina, Paul, and Kasich. And then the baby debate is going to be Christy, Huckabee, Santorum, and Jindal. And
because
poor
Pataki and Graham
have been cut entirely.
Right, because they didn't, I guess,
knows who they are.
Because you had to have 0.0001% to be in the kiddie debate, and they didn't have it.
They didn't have it. But now the RNC is panicking and has decided to take a stand because they're angry about something or other because things changing anger them because they're conservatives. And so they've decided that they're angry that they're using national polls instead of early primary state polls in order to determine who's in these debates. And then Brent and I had a long discussion about whether or not that's a good thing.
Yeah. I
keep in mind, Brent is from Iowa, so he's from an early primary state, and I am from New York, so I'm not. So I think partially our discussion had to do with our differing perspectives on what the primary process means for our respective home states.
Right, because I do, I don't know. I mean, I think that there is something to be said for that, because, like, I totally get where you're coming from, but while it's, I think, important to know how these candidates are doing nationally, I mean, it's just not how we elect a candidate. And whether that is right or wrong is almost neither here nor there, at least in terms of this debate.
Right.
Because we know that we elect people by who wins Iowa and who wins New Hampshire and who wins South Carolina and then who does well on Super Tuesday. Like, that's just how life works.
Right.
You know, I mean, when Obama won Iowa, he was down 20%. Nationally to Hillary Clinton. So are you going to say that, like, you know, you shouldn't have a Barack Obama type person, like, in a, you know, I don't know, he would have qualified
I mean,
in this world.
I don't think anyone who's going to win Iowa is not qualifying in these debates.
Well, I mean, people who have won it before are not qualified in this debates.
I mean,
the two people who have won it most recently.
The two people who've won it most recently are not qualified, but those people are not going to win it this time because neither of them are polling high enough in Iowa.
In Iowa itself.
Right. I would just say that, you know, most of the nation doesn't get to elect people on the basis of information because no one campaigns to them.
Yeah.
So in California, no one comes to campaign to us. They come to ask for money and then they go to Iowa and they give the money to Iowa. So I don't necessarily think that anything that gives more credence to what people in Iowa think based on what vastly different information that they get is necessarily fair to the rest of the primary. Because the other thing that these early primary states do is knock out credible candidates that could have won in other states.
That's true.
That's something that happens a lot in states like Iowa, especially in the GOP pool, where Iowa GOP people are fucking bananas.
Yeah.
And also, Iowa Democratic voters are not as far to the left as a lot of the blue state Democratic voters in later states. Even New Hampshire Democratic voters are kind of weird libertarian-y, and they're not to the far left. So none of these early states really accurately represent what a lot of the people in states that are going to definitively go blue or definitively go red think and would benefit from.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you.
So I feel like the national poll at least sort of levels out that playing field, because already so much of the campaign focus goes to states that aren't representative.
Yeah.
And they get all of our money, which I think is also rude.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, for them to decide who gets to be the, who we in New York get to vote for, because that happens a lot too. I mean, think about by the time John Edwards, you know, by the time the primary in New York State happened, I had done a,
I had already voted
because I had voted early, and John Edwards, who I had voted for, was out of the race.
Yeah.
And while maybe that was a specific circumstance in which he had also embarrassed himself, it does mean that these have consequences for later states that are not necessarily fair to the states where those people are polling well.
Well, honestly, I think the best scenario is honestly just rotating who is in that, in the primetime debate.
Also, because honestly, the best scenario is not to have 17 people run for your in your primary.
I agree. But I think that you would
what
least
are they thinking?
Because basically what you're doing is you're sort of relegating the people who are not polling well nationally, who might be polling better in specific states. You're relegating them to never being able to move up.
Right.
Which is not fair to them, and I understand why they're upset in that respect. Because, like, you know, nobody's watching the debate
into these
at 3 o'clock.
Exactly.
You know? And so they are not getting an equal chance to be heard by a national audience, and if they're using national polls, then they should have the same access to national audiences, and the only way that they get that is by being in these
all
debates.
On the same, No, that I would certainly agree with.
Yeah.
I think that's more of an issue for a party with 17 candidates to work out amongst themselves.
They have to figure that out.
We're not having that problem on the Democratic side.
No. When it comes down to it, I could really give a shit.
I mean, obviously. No, I mean, I see what you're saying in terms of, like, for the candidates, what it means to have nationwide access versus not have nationwide access, and what that, in terms of how that affects the democratic process. I think, though, it's sort of like is countered by the fact that the democratic process doesn't really exist in a world where Iowa gets to decide who we in New York and California get to vote for president. I've kicked the table 7 times during this. Sorry about that, guys. But so, in any case, this maybe is both a larger referendum on the primary system, the way that we organize it, because I think we should all vote on the same day for primaries. And then also, I mean, it would be less exciting for us.
That's true.
I mean, it would be a lot less speculation.
We like a long
primary process. But it also means that maybe the Republican Party should stop having 17 people run for... It's like they don't know. I mean, they have no control over what's going on. So they're just picking something to be angry about. So that because now they, you know, have fewer than 10 people on the stage.
I know. God forbid.
God forbid. And also, Chris Christie is not going to be our next president, guys. That was never going to happen. We told you that years ago.
Long time ago.
You're still insisting on giving the man just enough money to stay in the game. And it's like, why are you wasting your money on this? We definitively told you he wasn't going to be the president.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's not even bringing a happy message. At least Huckabee was bringing a message that we should save Social Security.
Right.
All Chris Christie was doing was doomsday saying.
That's true. But anyway. Chris Christie, I mean, specifically, not to go back and beat a dead horse here, but is a man who's doing okay in New Hampshire.
Right. Well, he would be, because that's the only state in the early primary process that could tolerate him.
Right.
I mean, the man's not going to be the president.
No.
He's not going to...
I agree.
He's not going to get elected on Super Tuesday to do anything other than potentially go relive Bridgegate again. That's what we would really use him for. In any case, there was also a Democratic forum.
Yes.
Right, because they're limited in the number of debates that they can have. So now they're having these ridiculous forums that no one knows about.
Which are just one-on-one interviews, this time with Rachel Maddow.
Right. MSNBC sponsored this, and nobody on the planet Earth watched it, because once the Ben Carson story broke, no one could think about
it. I didn't even know it was happening. And I am like a...
My mom didn't know it was happening.
I'm like a news blog troller.
Exactly.
Like, that's what I do during the day, oftentimes.
No,
is like, and my mom sent me a Facebook message, and she was like, did you... They also watch MSNBC all day, every day, so God bless them. But they were like, did you know about this thing that was happening tonight? And I was like, no, I didn't know about this thing.
No, there was no way on the internet to find out that this was happening. I did not see this a single place on the internet.
I know. I texted you, I think, like Friday in the afternoon, and I was like, this is starting in like an hour. Did you know it was happening?
So, had not heard a single thing about it. So basically, they were at Winthrop University.
Right.
Rachel Maddow on stage 101 with everyone.
We're down to three, by
the
way.
We're down to three.
Because we have already told you about the two that dropped out.
Right.
Lawrence Lessig dropped out officially this week, too, which we didn't bother to tell you about because it hardly seemed like a real thing.
We posted it on the...
I think we did,
On the social media interwebs.
But we are down to actually
We're down
only
to three.
Three.
And we're really only down to two because one of the three is not polling in the neighborhood of anywhere.
Correct.
But he was there at the candidates forum
because
he looks like a legitimate guy, because you can always add some white guy to a stage and then you're like, oh yeah, sure, this guy should be here.
And he speaks in a very sort of like self-important tone.
Right.
So he sounds like
the
person...
He sounds entitled enough to be the president.
Bingo.
In any case, it was interesting... mostly because Sanders got a little more pointed than he normally does in terms. He never mentioned Clinton,
right?
But he was very pointed about certain policy points that he differs with her on, or otherwise is frustrated that she has since flip flopped on.
Right.
So he, while he didn't mention her by name, and you know, was sort of like polite in his phrasing, didn't go the route of defending her in the wake of email dramas.
Yeah.
On Keystone, for example, he said, "Now, to me, as opposed to maybe some other unnamed candidate, the issue of Keystone was kind of a no-brainer. So I said no to Keystone on day one."
That's right.
On campaign finance reform, he said, "Now, I have many disagreements with Hillary Clinton." Well, I guess he did mention her by name.
Yeah.
And one of them is that I don't think it's good enough to just talk the talk on campaign finance reform. You've got to walk the walk.
Sure.
He said that in terms of Syria and Iraq, he was opposed to sending troops into Syria, which Obama has just decided to do. We talked about that last week.
Yep.
And then also reiterated that he had opposed the Iraq war from the beginning, unlike one certain person that will remain unnamed. And then he also said, you know, South Carolina is kind of where they're all looking to as the next kind of, because this was sort of like about, this was, I think, in South Carolina.
And it was about sort of like the first in the, like they were the billing it as like the first in the South.
Right. It was the first South Carolina focused event for the Democrats. Yeah. And he does have work to do there. He isn't tremendously popular among African-American voters. He's not well-known among African-American voters.
Right.
And South Carolina, obviously, especially in the Democratic pool, has a large African-American population. Yeah. He said that, you know, he saw room to kind of make up ground there. He has a strong civil rights record.
Right.
And
which he talked about.
He talked about that a lot. So, but he thought that he would eventually resonate with those voters, but he does not yet. He's not yet tremendously popular with them because people don't really know who he is.
Yeah.
O'Malley just like kind of went all in because he was like, why else not? Am I here? Why not?
Good.
I've got nothing to lose.
He might end up being a good person for Sanders to keep hanging around.
I think so. I mean, because
he can sort of do the dirty work.
He can do the dirty work. And all that he could really ding Sanders on was a thing that I don't think most Democrats care about.
No.
Because, you know, he was talking about Clinton in similar terms to Sanders, where he kind of criticized
her for getting to issues late.
Keystone,
or not,
right. Getting to, you know, TPP, like those types of things. But then he also, in his effort to ding Sanders, basically said, "I think that when President Obama was running for re-election, I was glad to step up and work hard for him while Senator Sanders was trying to find someone to primary him."
Yeah.
And then went on to say, "I am a Democrat. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm not a former independent. I'm not a former Republican." That was a ding at Hillary Clinton's Goldwater Girl days.
Uh-huh.
"I believe in the party of Franklin Roosevelt, the party of John F. Kennedy. I believe that we're all in this together and we can make a better future. And that's why I'm running for our party's nomination. And I've never once rejected the nomination of the Democratic Party, nor will I this time."
Well, and the thing about this, too, and
loyalty.
I know. Well, and I heard Bernie's response to this, and where this came from is, it's ridiculous. I mean, they're really stretching here, because what happened was Bernie Sanders,
for
years, I first fell in love with Bernie Sanders when we had K-Talk in Los Angeles, which was the left-wing radio show.
Right.
Stephanie Miller was on it. It's when Al Franken had a show before he was a senator.
Weird transition.
And Tom Hartman. Was on that network. And every Friday, he had brunch with Bernie, where Bernie Sanders would be on the entire episode and just take calls.
Yeah.
And I used to listen to it on my way to work, and I was like, this guy is the greatest guy that has ever existed, like, in life, basically.
Yeah.
And in 2012, he was asked by a caller if Obama should be primaried, and his response was something to the effect of, like, what's wrong with the primary process?
Yeah.
So it's not as if Bernie Sanders was out looking for someone to primary. He wasn't drumming up, like, dark horse candidates to run a primary against Obama. That's not what was happening.
No.
And even if it was, it's like you said, like, I don't give a rip.
No.
But I mean, like, well, it's just not what happened.
No, and also, Democratic voters don't vote for the Democrats just because, out of a sense of loyalty to the Democrats.
Yeah.
The Democrats are, just as any party is, capable of voting against our interests and departing from our from our policy. I mean, I think the Clintons showed, if anyone can do it, that the Democratic Party doesn't always represent what Democrats themselves think and can evolve without them.
Yeah.
You know, when someone like Chuck Schumer says that we shouldn't primary any, you know, we shouldn't primary Hillary Clinton and we should just all get in early on around support, what he's forgetting is that the Democratic Party is made up of people of varying, you know, degrees of progressiveness.
Right.
And that those people don't necessarily need to feel like it's not more important to be loyal to the Democrats than it is to be loyal to your principles.
Totally.
And that is, I think, what Bernie Sanders supporters know and are kind of responding to in his campaign, is that he is there. He is not afraid of the fact that he has not been a Democrat this whole time. He is saying, I support these are the policy objectives that I support. I think Democratic voters are in for these policy objectives. And like, the point is not to always vote Democratic. Right. The point is to vote right. It's to vote well. Yes. And so I don't think that this is such an interesting, like, this is not worth dinging. I mean, it's all that Martin O'Malley has. I get it.
It's not.
He is the only lifetime Democrat in the race. We've said that many times. So I get why he's doing it. But I also don't think that it necessarily will resonate with Democratic voters.
It's not changing the course of...
Democratic voters are not voting Democratic because the word Democrat is in the title of Democratic. Like, that's not what we do. And we don't need to be on an unthinking team.
No, we don't.
We want to be on a thoughtful team.
That's right.
In any case.
Yeah.
I hate when people talk this way.
Maddow pressed Clinton on her Wall Street ties.
And she ignored it completely.
She's sticking with her campaign message.
I'm not going to be swayed by special interests.
I'm going to take all of their money.
Right.
But I am not going to be swayed by them.
But I'm not
going
to let them tell me what to do once I have all their money. That's right. That's not how it works.
Yeah. She also sounded a much softer tone on the death penalty, which I think was probably smart for her. It's still ridiculous, though, because we know what she thinks about it. She's been in favor of
always.
It always in her entire life. So that's
much as I've been not in favor of it always my entire life. So we both are consistent on this, but she's just wrong.
Yes, exactly. Maddow did a bit with each candidate where she asked them to pick a card, which had some offbeat questions.
Yeah.
And we got some real revelations.
Weird information from everyone, like that Martin O'Malley owns a kilt.
Sure, sure.
That Bernie Sanders, if he wasn't a politician, said that he would want to be the president of CNN, which is a weird answer.
Weird one.
And then Clinton was asked about her personality type and obviously has been taking too many internet quizzes because she responded with extro introvert.
Right.
Which is a fake category that was recently made up in a BuzzFeed quiz, as far as I can tell. Because I recently got a quiz sent to me that was like, find out your personality type. Not everyone is just an introvert or an extrovert. We can all be different kinds of things. And then it had a bunch of these fake categories.
Yeah.
That's not a type of thing. So obviously Hillary Clinton has recently had too much free time. Yeah. Meanwhile, we're finally about to see a plan that will go nowhere to close Gitmo.
That's right.
We have a plan.
We've had many plans.
Well, we've been talking about plans for years.
Yeah.
We haven't actually had a plan because every time that we think we have a plan, it's apparently decided that it's not a plan that we're going to do. And so we decide to scrap the plan.
Yeah.
Now the Pentagon is this week expected to release yet another plan about how we're going to close Gitmo, which is like kind of last. The Obama administration is taking up some lame duck initiatives at this point.
Yeah.
And one of them is that they would like to close Gitmo as they promised us that they would.
Well, and some of the Republicans and John McCain specifically have said that the reason why it hasn't been closed is because there hasn't been a plan to close it. It's not that there's a lack of congressional approval. I would say that's wrong.
That's a lie, and John McCain's an idiot.
I think this sort of like allows them to be like, well, here's the plan. Because it is, you can't just shut it down. Because there are
prisoners
in there that
are there.
So you can't just be like, all right, well, go
home.
Roam Cuba now. Right. I mean, like, that's, you know.
It's not nice to Cuba, who we're trying to finally make up with.
So you do have to, have a plan.
Right. So this plan is going to name something like 7 sites that they think they could transfer some of these prisoners to. Some of these prisoners have been approved for transfer already, or eligible for transfer. So we can move them to other countries or whatever.
Right.
They're not dangerous to us at large in the same way that the remaining prisoners are. There's 112 still left. 53 are eligible for transfer. The rest, Obama's administration would like to move to a U.S. facility.
Yeah.
So they're looking at sites in Colorado and South Carolina and Kansas. Colorado seems to be one of the sort of central sites, at least according to this article, which focused exclusively on whether Colorado would be fit for this. And I was like, but you just said that they're not willing to play favorites and that you named all these other states. Whatever.
Also, Colorado doesn't want them. They're going to be in a jail.
So
it's not
senator,
like, again, it's not like they're being left to roam
but
Colorado.
So their senator is obviously opposing this, saying that even if they are in this jail, there will be times that they have to be transported to court or whatever, and that will create danger for Coloradans. P.S. There's already a ton of terrorists interred in Colorado at the moment. The Unabomber is there, I think.
Oh, he might be.
Or the Oklahoma City Bomber. One of them is there.
Sure.
Colorado has a lot of high security jail situations going on, so they can deal with this.
Yeah.
But so in any case, we're expecting the plan this week. We'll find out, I guess, what happens. I think we'd like to close Guantanamo,
but
if we can.
Yeah. People haven't ruled out the possibility that Obama might just
do it himself
anyway.
Well, if the problem is not that we don't have a plan, as John McCain says, and is that congressional approval will not be easy to come by, which is probably the actual case, there is a chance that, like he's done for many other things, Obama will have to just executive order that shit. Yeah. And they can reverse it all they want, but it's going to be much harder. It's harder to undo something than it is to do it in the first place. And that's what I think he's banking on for a lot of these things. Right. It's harder to...
That it's just going
to
get mired up in the courts and whether, you know, by the time that anybody still feels like they care about it, they won't care about it.
It's not going to be worth it. It's not going to be worth it. It's for 70 prisoners to be shuttled back and forth from Cuba to Colorado.
Right. We're gonna have legal battles over that for like decades.
They're in Colorado, just leave them in Colorado.
Then they're there.
Yeah.
Right. So, people in Colorado might be mad, but like, oh well.
Oh well.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, this is the kind of thing that is easier to do than undo. So hopefully at some point we deal with it in some way. And the plan is the first step.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, guys, we haven't talked about job numbers in a while because we've just sort of been ignoring them, but they were good this month, so we're going to talk about them. Also, we have a hilarious clip that we're going to play for you at some point too. But it had
to begin with, according to 538 and people who care about numbers, this was a standout month for jobs numbers. Now, of course, we say this with the caveat that jobs numbers are always fake, and so you never know whether they're going to be real or not. Yeah. But theoretically, we added 271,000 jobs, which is the most since last December.
Last December, right.
And then the unemployment rate fell to 5%, which down from 5.1. So, and that's the lowest in 7.5 years.
Yep.
But also, the thing that was really exciting, at least to the Nate Silver Brigade, was, you know, we've had some pretty discouraging jobs numbers for the last couple months. And with jobs numbers, you kind of have to look at the larger trend instead of the numbers themselves because the jobs numbers are so unreliable and change from month to month so dramatically. But this sort of showed that potentially the August and September jobs numbers had been the flukes because we continued a growth pattern that we had been seeing before those months.
Yes, exactly. And the other thing that was good about this is that the wages rose by 9 cents an hour and were up 2.5% from a year ago. And this is one thing that we have talked about a lot.
Wages hadn't been increasing.
We can add all the jobs that we want, but if people are having the jobs and then are still broke having the jobs, then like who really cares whether we have the jobs?
You know, obviously these aren't huge wage increases, but they sort of they're at least going in the right direction. Competition
which
is starting to hit
stagnating for a really long time.
Exactly.
So the fact that they went up,
that they're moving
at all, they're moving in the right direction is a good sign.
And also the labor force is growing, which means people are stopping being too depressed to look for work.
Right.
And
exactly.
Rejoining
That's
the labor
a lot,
force.
You know, we still have a lot of people who are not in the labor force or who are underemployed, but like, you know, it's like, yes, the labor force grew and a lot of people have been, all the people who sort of like to discount, you know, the jobs increases that we've had over the last few years, like to say that, well, there's so many people, you know, the reason the unemployment rate is so low is because there's a zillion people who aren't even looking for work, which is
true,
but that's starting to turn around. So the fact that the labor force grew by more than 300,000 people and we added those many jobs, it was like a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah.
It wasn't, that's not a small
and
thing.
And underemployment fell, which means that the jobs are higher quality jobs than they used
exactly.
to be. Because for a long time, we were adding jobs that were terrible.
Yeah.
And people were still not getting any money from those jobs.
Yes.
And also, as a sort of final point, the types of jobs we added were sort of broad-based. They were in different industries. It wasn't like one industry was leading the charge. So it's not like construction is the only industry that's growing and everything else is falling apart.
Right.
We saw, they have something called a diffusion index that kind of indexes how, you know, how diverse the industries of that are experiencing job growth are. And it was at its highest level since last February. So that's a good sign. Now, all of that good news might have sounded like a time to celebrate to you.
Yes.
Unless you were receiving that very same news and were an anchor on Fox News. And then you might sound like this.
We're back with a Fox Business Alert right now. The October jobless report for hourly workers just released 90 seconds ago. The unemployment rate is, as you can see right there, 5%. I believe that could be actually a little lower than in August and in September as well.
That's right, Steve. Only 271,000 new jobs were added last month. That is up from September as well. Analysts were expecting more than 180,000 jobs.
Only 271,000 jobs were added. Analysts were expecting 180,000.
Right.
And they didn't reach that goal because only 271,000.
It's important to note, too, that while this was Steve Doocy and Elizabeth Hasselbeck, by the way, real geniuses.
Yeah, on Fox News.
This was on Fox and Friends. And as Steve Doocy is stumbling over trying to decide whether the unemployment rate has gone down or not, when he's like, there's a giant graphic with a huge red arrow pointing down with 5.0 on there.
So,
and then and then the next graphic says $271,000 with an arrow pointing
up. They gave them all the clues. This is maybe an example of how even the same facts are getting Fox News viewers different information.
I know, that's what I said. I was like, they gave us all of the right information.
And we still didn't get the right facts.
But if you only listened to their tone, you would have thought that last month's job report was an abject failure. So good.
Oh, Fox News.
Never change.
Please change immediately. Immediately. Change a lot.
Tomorrow.
Change all the time.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we sort of teased this before because we were talking about a different Obamacare challenge case, but here's another one that's on the radar now that the Supreme Court has decided to accept.
Can't quit Obamacare cases.
Can't quit Obamacare cases. They love hearing Obamacare cases.
They do.
So they announced on Friday that they're going to take up yet another ACA challenge. This one from the Little Sisters of the Poor and other religious nonprofit groups. By the way, fuck you, Little Sisters of the Poor.
I know.
We'll explain why. You sound like you do such great work, but you're obviously fucking assholes.
Yeah.
Anyway, they are challenging the requirement that group health plans that they offer provide contraceptive coverage to women at no cost.
Which,
that's part of the ACA. It's a major public health issue to provide contraception to women at an affordable cost or at a low cost, and also to provide reproductive health care of various
sorts. But there's already an accommodation for them.
Yeah. This is what's so infuriating, and this is why I say, fuck you, Little Sisters of the Poor. First of all, we heard this case already when it came to religious institutions, and because of
there
it...
There was already an outcry. We've already fixed the law.
And here's
We've changed
what we
the
did.
Law for you already.
There is an accommodation that allows them to say, hey, we're a religious nonprofit, and we don't approve of contraception, to their health plan or to the Department of Health and Human Services, and then the health plan or some other entity, whoever ends up being in charge of doing this, is required to pay the cost of the contraception coverage. They are not required to cover it themselves. Yep. So we made the accommodation, but they say that it still makes them complicit in providing contraception. So what they're saying is that even if their employees, who would have to actively seek out contraception in order to receive this benefit, decide that for them, the right choice is to get contraception coverage, because even though they're employed by Little Sisters of the Poor, they're a Jewish woman who just works as a professional executive assistant or whatever.
Yeah.
They want to make sure that that woman who has made a decision about her own health and body is unable to do so because of their religious beliefs.
Right.
So fuck you, Little Sisters of the Poor.
God.
I'm sick of this.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
This seems like this has to go down in there's no way.
I
feel like the reason that they're hearing this is because they're going to tell the Little Sisters of the Poor to go fuck themselves.
They have to.
They have to, right? We've been there, done this already.
And this is just like a sad attempt at making a charity that sounds like little old women.
Yeah.
Sound like they also are against this. But listen, if you're a little old woman who doesn't want me to have contraception coverage, then fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't care if you're Catholic and it scandalizes
you. I'm not asking you for it.
No.
You've already forced me to go ask somebody else.
To go ask the government or a health plan for it. We have made the accommodation so that you don't have to feel like you personally paid for it.
No.
And now you're still telling me that's not good enough.
No.
We need to make sure you can't have it.
No, I don't like them at all.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
In any case, hopefully they took this case to tell them to go fuck themselves, but who knows?
Yeah.
This court's a mystery to
me. You never know.
Many times.
It is. Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of things that are a mystery to me.
I know. How did we miss this last night? I feel like we should have been driving on our way to go see
to
dancing
go see
last night. We should have seen this in the sky last night.
Yeah, because
there was apparently a UFO in the sky last
night.
There
was a UFO. A giant missile flew over Southern California / America last night.
Yeah.
They were doing missile testing. According to the military's theory is that they were doing my theory is that the end times are coming.
Sure.
Another prominent theory is that aliens were attacking.
Aliens were here.
But apparently, according to the military, it was a Navy Strategic Systems Programs test off of the USS Kentucky, where they fired a ballistic missile, submarine missile thing. I don't know if those words made sense. It wasn't armed, but how do we know? It's a missile in the sky. It sounds pretty scary. Over Southern California.
Yeah.
And then it looked like a crazy shooting star that was maybe going to kill us all.
Right, but everybody was, like, really blowing out about this. But
it sounds scary.
It does sound scary, but how did we not see it?
I know, and they're doing these tests until November 12th, so they're rerouting commercial flights flying out of LAX because they can't fly over the ocean anymore. P.S., LAX is right on the ocean.
It's on the ocean.
So that's scary.
Yeah.
In any case.
Oftentimes, to land at LAX, you end up sort of, like,
flying
looping
into
around
the ocean.
Flying into the ocean.
Yeah.
It ends up being a scary proposition.
Exactly.
So
in any case, look forward to views of downtown Los Angeles as you approach LAX, because that's currently your only flight route.
That's the only way to
Here's a dumb thing that's happening.
Oh my god, this is too
idiot
stupid.
Idiot Christians and their idiocy.
That's right.
If you were wondering why you maybe feel less hopeful about Jesus after your morning coffee, have been recently.
It's Starbucks' fault.
It's Starbucks' fault.
That's right.
Because Starbucks, like the anti-Christmas people that they are, released their seasonal cups.
Right. And they're a sparse, minimalist red with a green logo. That's it. Now, previously, they had Christmas-themed, but I don't even want to call them Christmas-themed.
They were winter-themed designs,
because they had snowflakes and ornaments and nature
scenes. P.S., the only thing that remains on the cups is Christmas colors. Right, everything else that was a completely secular ode to winter, as we know it,
right,
was removed. And all that was left was the Christmas-themed.
That's right.
The only thing that remains on these cups is the imprint of baby Jesus.
That's right.
Meanwhile, Christians are losing their fucking minds over it.
But you know what? A snowflake does not represent the virgin birth.
No.
Okay?
No.
Like, that's not... So if you remove the snowflake from the cup, you shouldn't have lost any of the Christianity
other
that
than maybe
think that
a
you...
feeling that you miss winter a little bit because you live in Southern California and it's really fucking hot.
Yeah, exactly. But Andrea Williams of the UK-based organization Christian Concern told Breitbart, and of course Breitbart's on the case, this is a denial of historical reality and the great Christian heritage behind the American dream that has so benefited Starbucks.
The UK-based organization, right. we remind you.
Yeah, exactly. This also denies the hope of Jesus Christ and his story so powerfully at this time
of year.
I'm
going to reread that because you are used to seeing his in capital letters, and every time I read a sentence that refers to his as in God, I read it as his story. So, that sentence should have read, this also denies the hope of Jesus Christ and his story so powerfully at this time of year.
Fair enough.
Also,
that's true.
A random person who's not noteworthy but made the news with a tweet about this tweeted, my Christmas mentality. If a store won't promote Christmas, re-Starbucks, I'm not spending my hard-earned money there.
Great,
again,
fine.
The only thing that they've chosen to do
is remove a snowflake.
Right. They are literally only promoting Christmas at this point.
That's right.
I don't see any Hanukkah colors on that cup.
No.
They've removed all the blue and white from their cups.
No blue and white.
No blue and white to be found anywhere. So the only remaining trace of the holiday season that they left on their cups is Christmas.
Yeah, that's right. So, and also there was a former pastor, Joshua, how do you say that last name?
Feuerstein?
Feuerstein? Yeah. Anyway.
What it sounds like to me is a Jewish last
Jewish
name. I'm
person,
just saying
yes.
it. Continue.
But he claimed in a viral Facebook video that he had pranked Starbucks. Pranked is in quotation marks because
it's not funny.
Funny or really that pranky. But he went in and he told the Starbucks person that his name was Merry Christmas, which forced the barista to write the words Merry Christmas on the cup as that was his name. So when they read your
name,
they drink.
I'm going to go in and tell them that my name is God is Dead or something.
Well, they never get your names right anyway.
No, you might as well tell them your name is...
that's what you end up
That's what you end up with on your cup.
Yeah, I got a cup with Brit on it the other day, B-R-I-T.
Which is a women's name.
And oftentimes they will spell yours right, but they will say Leela. That's
yes.
how things are.
Or they'll spell they'll say it right, but spell it with four
with
extra
y
vowels.
Or, right.
Like I've gotten ones that were L-Y-L-A-H, L-E-I-L-A-H, like so many extra letters. Don't assume that there's a silent letter in a name if you don't know.
But this same former pastor also took a gun into a coffee shop.
Yeah, because Howard Schultz, who's the CEO of Starbucks, had asked that Starbucks customers leave their guns at home.
Right. So
he thought, hey, this
anyway.
Isn't a good place for a gun. And this guy was like, I'm going to show them.
That's right.
I'll take my gun to Starbucks.
Yep.
What a weird visual that is.
Oh, God.
And then there was a backlash of the people who were mad about the backlash. So then there was a lot of Twitter warring going on about this.
Well, it's too dumb.
The moral of the story is that this is too dumb.
That's right.
Meanwhile, don't go to IHOP.
In final news, don't go to IHOP.
Sinkhole Radio is back to remind
back.
You
it's been
with
a while.
PSA. We've been doing
thanks
a lot of PSAs recently.
Thanks to
your
dad, right?
Yeah,
your dad came through with a clutch for us.
My dad
he?
Came through. My dad keeps on top of the sinkhole stories in the news for us.
Yeah.
He's sort of like our lead sinkhole researcher. and he sent us a story about an IHOP in Mississippi that was a brand new IHOP. It opened last week. And on Saturday, that was yesterday. Its entire parking lot got eaten by a giant sinkhole, and 14 cars disappeared into the crevice.
Yeah, it was 100 feet long, 14 cars, 30 feet deep, and it was
and
all 50 mud.
50 feet wide, and it was just mud, so it could be more cars. We don't know what was buried under
and
the other
gonna,
cars.
It's raining like crazy there, and it's
so
going
they're
to
never get the
rain,
cars
so we're never
going to get the
gone.
Earth literally ate the cars.
Ate the cars. That's right.
But I mean, I'm just going to say, if you're a person who is deciding to go to an international house of pancakes that builds itself as a house of pancakes that's international but can't be bothered to serve real maple syrup, you get what you get.
That's right. I agree. Couldn't agree more.
You know, and also, if you're going to visit a new IHOP, give it some sinking time.
Let it time to settle.
Let it settle.
Yeah.
Maybe a good time to really feel out your options.
Well, people were so excited about the IHOP, they couldn't resist themselves.
Yeah.
As soon as that fucker opened,
they were in there with their 14 cars.
Were there, waiting.
Waiting for
sugar and carbs.
Sugary, non-real maple syrup.
That's right. Yep.
Infuriating. Nothing gets my goat quite like a house of pancakes that won't serve real maple syrup.
That's right.
That's a real...
Moral of the story here is go to a Waffle House.
Exactly. In any case, that's the news this week. We'll be back next week with more news that...
That's right.
...promises to be exciting because there's a Republican debate.
Yes.
So, and also follow us on Twitter because we tweet that shit.
Yeah, we do.
We don't fool around.
Really well, too.
We are heroic Republican debate tweeters.
That's right.
So we'll
talk to you then.
Talk to you next week. Bye.